up, everybody? Welcome to a bonus episode of Positive Regression. As we said last week, David put out the bat signal for listener questions, and man, did you guys deliver so much more than we could have ever anticipated and hoped for. So thank you for that. So much so that we have come up with a bonus episode to answer all their good questions. So thank you for that. David, I'm blowing off the traditional introduction. I'm Alan Cavana. He's David Smith. This is Positive Regression, of course. But let's get right to it because we have all these great listener questions to answer, David. Let's start off first from Brendan Wilhide on Twitter. Which drivers have gained the most from the choose cone rule in Cup? Are there any consistent winners in that regard? At what point does gambling on the choose cone become a bankable skill for driver and crew chief? Great question, especially because, David, you look into this.
It's a good question. We've addressed this just in talking about this on our recent restart episode, but the Penske guys, namely Brad Keselowski and Joey Logano, are making the majority of their restarts from the preferred groove position this season. And that does a lot to fuel their good positional nets. Keselowski currently leads the series. Now, it should be said that Ricky Stenhouse is also in the 59% range here, along with Keselowski and Logano, but not having the success. And that's the component that is going to help drive the narrative. Brad Keselowski, look, he's at this high clip of his restarts coming from inside the top 14 from the preferred groove. He's producing well on restarts in addition to choosing well. So the execution of the restart itself makes him appear smarter. And I don't know, Alan, let me know if I'm on the right track here. I don't feel like this is going to become a bankable skill as much as it's going to be something similar to playing blackjack. There are mathematical truisms that you adhere to in an effort to win over the long haul when you're playing blackjack, right? But unless you're counting cards, this is how you do it legally. The same kind of goes here. No one is going to moneyball this. No one is going to break restarts because they're so good at choosing. You're just going to have intelligent drivers and teams making good decisions, following what makes the most mathematical sense, at which point they then have to go out and execute a good restart. But we're going to see this, especially on tracks that have big disparities between the preferred and the non-preferred groove. We saw this last year in one of the early days of the choose rule, Dover. Kevin Harvick didn't make a single non-preferred groove restart attempt in his win last season at Dover. That was by design. He didn't want to be in that groove. And that decision-making helped put him where he wanted to be, but he then went out and executed on those restarts. He gained 8 spots on 4 attempts. And you don't just do that by picking correctly. You do that by picking correctly and then having something like a textbook restart from the position that you've deemed acceptable.
Yeah, I don't know if there's skill, but there's certainly a lot of homework that goes into it, right? There's communication with the spotter. If you listen, if you're fortunate enough to be at a race and hear the different communication that goes on, there's different kind of almost languages and cadences and ways they communicate. You know, some people click off just how many are in one row. Others want different information, and that could be valuable. I don't know if that's a bankable skill, but certainly communication and homework plays a big role in it.
Yeah, and to varying degrees, everyone's doing it. And it might not, the driver might not want the minutiae of it all. They just want to be told where to go, but that's part of it. That's a reliance on someone that you at least accept is smart and knowledgeable of the situation. And that's what it's become. That's what the drivers essentially asked for when they politicked for the choose rule. But as a bankable skill, yeah, I don't know that that's ever really going to be a thing. I think it's just playing the mathematical odds, and whatever of the two options best suits you at that point in time, that is what you take.
All right. Good question. Next up, Jaggy, sorry if I mispronounced that, but Jaggy on Discord, how much, if any, has restart retention from the front row changed due to no longer being able to choose who you want directly behind you? This is a good question. David, I heard you, I think, propose a question like this to Brad Keselowski when we were at Charlotte together. It was something of a similar situation, right?
Yeah, his was, how would it affect, the question that I asked Brad was, how it would it affect staying out on old tires, that kind of risk if everyone behind you can choose? But now, just on a basic front row restart, you have no ability to choose your restart with the knowledge of who will certainly be behind you. And that's how I treated this question. I looked at this. There have been tracks on which the restart dynamic has radically changed from last year to this year. We sort of thought that would happen with the horsepower change at Darlington, and it did. But for the choose rule having an impact on this kind of flip, what the question describes is good for maybe a restart attempt in isolation, but not all of them in totality. And as an aside, and it's kind of related, I don't know that choosing a desired pusher matters much on some of these tracks, especially the 550 tracks. You're either going to go forward or you're not. And it benefits everyone to push. Some drivers are better at pushing than others. I think that's certainly the case. But to deliberately not push the driver in front of you in a lot of these cases that I've watched, that does not end well for a driver. Darrell Waldrip was lampooned for some of the terminology he mentioned, you know, vortex theory, not so hot. But he came up with one called coopetition, if you remember, Alan. Cooperative competition, I suppose. It kind of makes sense here with choose rule restarts. What's best for the car in front of you is often what's best for you as an individual. So I don't know. I understand not wanting to go out of your way to help a car that isn't a stablemate or a corporate teammate or whatever we're calling them these days. But it also affects your race to do that. And I don't see that happening too often.
Yeah, I like the question. I like the premise of it, that you're thinking that way. But really, if you think deep into it, right? I mean, second place is never, rarely, I don't think ever really, is going to choose to start behind the leader, right? So that's not going to happen. So then you have only two options for a driver that's going to start behind you instead of what used to be, I guess, one, right? So again, if there's communication, if there's homework, you only have to put in your head the two potential options, you know, third or fourth. Only one of them is going to start behind you, and there's only two options for that one driver, right? So I think you can do that math and analysis pretty quickly when it's only two options. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, and even then, it might not be worth the trouble. Restart where you want to be. And you're asking
especially
a lot
as a leader.
You're going to need someone to push you to make sure that you're not being pushed to the left or the right of you, but you have to make the decision that's best for yourself. And then if you are in that position, let's say the second row, then be the pusher. Like there's really no reason not to be, unless there's just an opening plain as day that you have to take. And in that case, you do it. More often than not, there is not, and you just simply execute the restart. So I don't know that there's that much maneuvering involved, even though it's fun to think that there is.
All right, good question. Next up, another one from Discord, from Neo Metal Armstrong. Love this question, because David, we mentioned this a lot. If speed is the number one on the list of statistics most closely correlated to winning, what are number two and three? This is something I've heard you say before, but I've never thought about it like Neo Metal Armstrong has. I've never wondered what numbers two and three are. Speed is king. What is after that?
Number two is easy. It's the driver. In this case, this year, Piers' correlation coefficient with average finish is a positive 0.92. That is a very high relationship. Number three on the list, if we want to go down it, It is fluid based on the year, but in recent years, it was overall restart position retention. Oh. Now, this year is going to be a little bit different. The choose rule could certainly impact this. Fewer cautions across the board could impact this. But that it does sort of make sense that the combo of car and driver, which rank first and second is correlative metrics for success, makes sense that they come together for a third metric. But it's, you know, certainly something to keep an eye on. And it also speaks to the importance, at least in recent seasons, of restarts.
All right. Good question. Neo Metal Armstrong. Next up from Blake Phillips on Twitter. How much of an advantage, if any, does a desirable pit stall selection confer on driver over a less desirable one? This is interesting, David. We don't get into this too much on positive regression, and I was just trying to rack my brain about the desirable. Certainly, there are desirable pit stalls. That's why they have the choices, and that's why I can assure you that every crew chief has a list of every track about which ones you want to pick. You know, the first stall out, the last one, the ones with openings, all that stuff. But how much of an advantage, if any, does a desirable pit stall selection confer on a driver over a less desirable one? How do you interpret that?
Well, I mean, if we were going to quantify it, it's going to be different from team to team, but also the term desirable is subjective, and there's a way that you value a pit stall that might be different to other teams. Mm. A good example of this was when Joey Logano was paired with Todd Gordon as his crew chief, they always selected pit stall number two. And the reason they claimed that that was the case was familiarity. They did not want to take a risk, and certainly in key races, of Joey completely missing the pit stall. He wanted that sense of familiarity, regardless of the track, to know exactly where he was going, and it was one less thing to think about. You know, you think of Steve Jobs always wearing the same clothes every day, or something like, because it's one less decision that he didn't have to make, and that was kind of the case here. But certainly that's far different than what we see usually. And I think usually the advantage is in mitigating the risk of the stop itself inside the box. Because if you're looking for a pit stall with an empty spot in front of you or behind you, that affects entry exit. If entry into the pit box or the exit are crowded by another car, that's going to cost time. And the way in which you get inside the box affects the stop. If you're having to get in around a car that's pitted in front of you, or you're trying to, you know, you're going to have to maneuver your way out, so you pit accordingly, well, that affects what the crew does, because all of what they do is choreographed. The slightest thing wrong can knock that askew. So when teams pick pit stalls, yes, they're searching for, you know, familiarity, whatever timing lines that they can possibly game, and that changes based on the racetrack. But more routinely, they're looking for the pit stalls with the clean entry or exit just to reduce the risk of the stop going wrong. As we have talked about, that's the thing that affects pit stops more. There are no fast pit stops. There are just normal pit stops and bad pit stops. You're trying not to have a bad pit stop.
All right. Thank you, Blake, for that. And finally, from Jerry Eldred on Discord, this was a thinker. Jerry asks us, name five veteran drivers in the lower levels that you think belong in the Cup Series. Not looking for prospect types like Cindric, but guys who either didn't get a long enough look at Cup level or were never given a shot for whatever reason. Let me see, David, one, two, did I get five? I think I only came up with four, but it's an interesting exercise here. Jerry wants to know five drivers that could have had a better shot, or you'd like to see another shot at Cup. I'll let you, we can go one for one, or I'm sure we have some overlap, but who'd you start with?
I'm curious. I want to hear who you have picked. If it's four, or five, it doesn't matter. Combined, we'll come up with five names, I'm sure. But I want to hear your thoughts, your rationale. Who do you got?
Justin Allgaier is my first one. I think we have seen him get better with age as we, as you know, the gospel we preach on this podcast. If you don't know by now, drivers do improve by age. And in terms of, you know, remember when he was in the H. Scott Motorsports and had a cup of coffee, you know, a couple seasons in Cup, but has excelled and can win races down at the Xfinity level. So, you know, again, there I only have four because I just couldn't find that many to choose from. But Justin Allgaier is certainly at the top of my list. Another maybe I'm a homer because I was a Truck Series guy. I want to see what Grant Enfinger can do. He could. I picked a lot of winners. He won races down in the Truck Series. Is still far capable of winning races. He's not a prospect. He is in his mid 30s, so he is maturing in terms of performance. So I think Grant Enfinger, I'd like to see him possibly. I don't know. AJ Allmendinger should be maybe the top of the list. We have sung his praises. As you have said last year, David, he was, I think, had the best peer in the Xfinity Series, now going for a championship and winning all sorts of races because he is age, 39. So give him another shot in Cup, especially with all the road courses. And then my final one was Brett Moffitt. He was in Cup. He was Cup Rookie of the Year, if you remember that, in a Michael Waltrip racing car. Had some good runs, but for whatever reason, you know, not there anymore. But he went down to the Truck Series, won a championship, won races. I think he is kind of outperforming some of that Auer Motorsports equipment on a weekly basis. And so maybe, you know, if there was a ride out there, you'd want somebody who, a veteran who can win races and give him a shot in Cup again. That was my four.
Okay, so I'm going to try not to duplicate any of you said. To me, this is a question that has a lot of fun answers, but maybe just one or two realistic answers. I guess one of them is Allmendinger, but the other realistic answer is John Hunter Nemechek. Should have never left the Cup Series. That's there's a lot to say about that. As for Allmendinger, he's 39 now. It's diminishing returns from 2022 going forward, but the schedule has kind of rolled into his favor. I mean, he's a natural fit for what NASCAR is attempting to be both now and in the immediate future. So a re-entry makes some sense. But for the fun answers, I think these are hypotheticals. I don't know that there's really any chance of these happening, but guys like Parker Kligerman and Andy Lally should have, of course, stayed around longer. The late Brian Clausen was completely and I think utterly failed by Chip Ganassi Racing. He should have been driving stock cars. In hindsight, Bobby Santos and Bubba Pollard should have been given longer leashes, considering what they've done on the short track scene lately. Doug Kobe should have been given a chance as well. SRX winner, first time out, multiple time, a wheel and modified tour champion. So there are a few who should have been given more consideration, but to actually rectify the mistake of not having them. I mean, in Clausen's case, it's impossible, but for those others, there's so many years of development that is necessary to get to a point where you're able to take advantage of your statistical peak. Those are gone. So I don't know how smart that is, if a team was willing to invest in that risk. We see Junior Motorsports doing that with Josh Berry, who did not have a traditional entry into a national series ride and is having some success. That's kind of what it takes, though, is an owner saying, okay, I really like this driver. We've missed a lot of formative years, and we're going to try to do this. We're just going to see what happens with it. I don't know how realistic that is because we don't see that a lot. What Josh Berry is getting from Dale Earnhardt Jr. is admirable on Dale Jr.'s part, but it is also rare. It is certainly not the norm. So it's a good question, and this is a thought exercise that can go towards a lot of different drivers. But I think from the most realistic standpoint that we can see, it's John Hunter Nemechek. Just now he's just racking up Truck Series wins, you know, padding stats. Once he's done proving whatever he needs to prove to himself by beating younger drivers every week, he would be a welcome re-addition to the NASCAR Cup Series because he proved last year that he belongs.
Good question. Good answer. And thank you all, you guys, the listeners out there, because this bonus episode was made because of your response to David's call for questions. So we always appreciate that. Thank you for listening to Positive Regression. Don't forget, as always, we're available Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Stitcher, Spotify, Luminary, TuneIn, and YouTube. We're available no matter your device, our entire back catalog. Go to posregpod.com. If you like what you're hearing, please leave us that rating or review. That kind of stuff does help spread the word, as does hearing from you and in getting your questions. We'll make a whole episode out of that stuff. So make sure you listen to Thursday's episode when we come back for the week. But thank you again for listening to this bonus episode. For David Smith, I'm Alan Cavana. This is Positive Regression.